Philippians chapter 2, 12 to 30. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, so now, not only as in my presence, but much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. Do all things without grumbling or questioning, that you may be blameless and innocent, children of God without blemish in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast to the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I may be proud that I did not run in vain or labor in vain. Even if I am to be poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with you all. Likewise, you also should be glad and rejoice with me. I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon, so that I too may be cheered by news of you. For I have no one like him who will be genuinely concerned for your welfare. They all seek their own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. But you know Timothy's proven worth, how as a son with a father he has served with me in the gospel. I hope, therefore, to send him just as soon as I see how it will go with me, and I trust in the Lord that I myself will come also. I have thought it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother, and fellow worker and fellow soldier, and your messenger and minister to my need, for he has been longing for you all and has been distressed because you heard that he was ill. Indeed, he was ill, near to death. But God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. I am the more eager to send him, therefore, that you may rejoice at seeing him again, and that I may be less anxious. So receive him in the Lord with all joy, and honor such men. For he nearly died for the work of Christ, risking his life to complete what was lacking in your service to me.
Thanks, Jeff. Well, I'm glad that you're here today. Always good to be together with you. And I trust you saw God at work in your week. I don't know what your week was like. Every week, every day is different. But we want to see God work in us and through us, don't we? My week started, I had the privilege of being at Camp Chaminade the first 2 days. Last week, Monday and Tuesday, was our pastor teaching conference. And I don't know if, how many of you have ever been to Camp Chaminade? You've been there? Yeah, all right. Now, how about the camp to the north that Chaminade owns, Rock Ridge in Ely? Been there, all right? This is a little further. How many of you have been to the Camp Chaminade one in China? Okay, it's a little further. That's a long story, but Deb and I have served on the Camp Chaminade board for a bunch of years here. We're still currently on the board. God's doing some great things there. Anyway, the pastor's teaching conference is in the fall every year, and I love being there with my colleagues from our district, which is basically the state of Minnesota, and some of those guys have been a great model to me about how to be a good pastor, a good preacher, or husband, or father, or whatever. And I look around, and some of them that have been there in the past have either moved away or gone home to be with the Lord. And at the end of each session, the teaching session, we were in small groups for discussion and prayer. And it was me and my friend Don Rigstad. I don't know if you know that name. He Free Church at Lakeville for many years. So me and him and a couple other younger pastors, and I don't know what we were talking about, but they kind of looked to us and said, "Well, you guys have been here for a while. What do you think? How long have you been here?" And I said, "Well, I've been in the pastorate here in Minnesota since 1992." Don says, "Oh, well, yeah, I've been here since 1981. And one of the guys goes, "Wow, that was the year I was born." And Don and I looked at each other like we were laughing about it afterwards, like, "Yeah, what happened? We used to be the young guys, and now we're the old guys." But it occurred to me that probably as one of the old guys, I was probably a role model, or am a role model, for some of the younger pastors in the district. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is role models. We all need them, don't we? People that we can follow, that sort of show us the way. Maybe you're from Minnesota, but a lot of us are sort of from Missouri, the show me state, right? Show me, what does it mean? What does it look like to follow Jesus? And, you know, when you're little, when you're a kid, you know, you want to be like a pro athlete or Superman or Cinderella. And those are fun as heroes, but they're not really good role models because we're never going to be like them, right? So God often brings people into our lives that can be an example to us. Often those folks that are close to us, someone in our family or a friend, your church, someone older, someone wiser. Maybe you grew up in a family like, or your place in the family is kind of like mine, where I'm the oldest of six kids. And I have my younger sister Pam is just a year younger than me. So my parents were, and not in a bad way, but often would remind us, now remember, you're the big brother, you're the big sister. And our younger siblings were going to follow us. And that's true. Well, God gives us lots of role models in the Bible, right? People that we can look at and go, oh, okay. Now, some of those role models are positive. Some of them are negative, right? Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's why they're in there, too. We can learn from them. We've been studying the book of Philippians. Here's what, these are in our verses today, but in the next chapter, chapter 3, verse 17, Paul says this, brothers, join in imitating me. Follow me. And keep your eyes on those who walk according to the example you have in us. Well, he's going to give us three role models today. Paul himself, and then two of his colleagues, a guy named Timothy and a guy named Epaphroditus. Three different models that are going to show us a picture of three different godly characteristics. Here's the first one. All right, I guess that's not going to work. All right, Paul himself, he's going to model for us stability. And by stability, these are my words, stability, I mean consistency. That no matter what happens, he's going to keep things in balance. I don't know about you, but for me, sometimes the pendulum can swing back and forth, right? I go, well, I'm going to work on this, and I'm thinking about and concentrating on this area of my life. And okay, that's good, but then what happens? Over here, it gets neglected. I go, oh boy, I forgot all about that. So I swing back over here and kind of work on this. And then other thing, well, keeping them all in balance can be tricky. Paul's going to do that for us. Let's look. Here's what he says the first time. Three different kind of pairs or things of combination. He's going to balance purpose and power. He says, therefore, my beloved, as you've always obeyed, so now, not only as in my presence, he was there, but much more in my absence. He's not there now, whereas Paul, remember, he's in prison in Rome, and so he's writing. So here's what I want you to do. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Now, prepositions, you know what those are? Those are little words, but they're important. It says, work out your own salvation. Doesn't say work for your salvation, work towards your salvation, work at your salvation. It says, work it out. That is, God has already placed that salvation in you. So you're not working your way toward heaven. That's not what this is talking about. Work out what God has already worked in you. Bring it to completion. If you work out a math problem, you work on it to completion. And often my teacher would say, show your work. You know, not just the answer is 5. Well, how did you get that? You know, you were guessing or what? You know, you copied from somebody's paper? No, just show your work. If you work in a field, harvest time, get the most out of it you can. If you're working a mine, bring out the ore as the best you can. Now, how do we do that? Well, of course, he's already talked quite a bit, given a lot of verses before this, and we'll continue to. But the verses just in chapter 2, he talked, if you've been with us, he talked about harmony and humility and unity and following Christ as an example. This is a lifelong process of becoming more like Christ. And he says, you're going to do this with fear and trembling. Yeah, but I thought Philippians talks about joy. Isn't that a contradiction? No, it's not. The Bible uses fear in 2 ways, and we use it the same way. Fear, first, is like dread or, oh, I'm afraid of snakes. You know, I don't like them. And when I see them or they're there, I sort of panic. That's not this fear, but that is one fear. The other way the Bible talks about fear is awe, of reverence. Oh, wow, I fear God. Psalms and Proverbs, those books have several verses about the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's how Proverbs starts out. So we're going to work out our salvation with a deep passion and a reverential awe. God, I want to please you. That's the purpose. Well, how does that work? How does that happen? Look at verse 13. It's God who works in you. Yeah, but I thought I was working. Well, yeah, it's a cooperation, isn't it? It's a combination. I'm cooperating with God, and what's he doing? He's working in me. That's present tense. That means that's happening right now in a continual way. God is working both to will and to work for his good pleasure. Interesting. So not just that I would do good works, but that I would actually want to do good works. God's going to work in a deeper level, right? Here's the 2 extremes, maybe. The 2 ditches we don't want to fall into. One is, just let go and let God. You don't have to do anything. God will do it all. See, that's too passive. That avoids responsibility on our part. I don't want to go there. The other one is, God helps those who help themselves. Do you know that Bible verse? It's not a Bible verse. That's Benjamin Franklin. That's not in the Bible. What that says is, it's pretty much up to me, and I can get pretty much all the way, and I just need God to sort of give me that last little oomph to get me over the hump. Don't want that either. That's too much on our part. No, God is working in us both to do good works and we want to do good works. Why? Because we're working our way to heaven and it's all by works. No, Paul's already said that. That's not the case. No. God gives the desire and the doing, right? The willing and the working. The desire and the deed, the prompting and the performing. Keeping those in balance sometimes can be tricky. Let's look at another one. Balancing attitudes and actions. He starts with, and I don't know if this is an attitude or an action, it's probably both. Do all things without grumbling or disputing. A negative attitude. Now, you can grumble or dispute. You can grumble towards people. You can grumble towards God. You can grumble toward the circumstances that God's put you in. In the Old Testament, the Israelites complained a lot. And oftentimes it was directed toward their leader, Moses. They grumbled. Grumbling can happen in church sometimes too, can it? Why is that? Well, because we sort of have expectations of how things will go. And people don't always live up to our expectations. So then we can't believe it. And so we start to grumble and murmur and complain. Remember one church, we had a card that people filled out. And on the front, you could fill out your name and contact information. And on the back, you could put prayer requests or comments. And our policy was, if there was never a name on it, we would just kind of throw them away because you couldn't respond. I didn't know what to do or who is this? Well, I remember one interesting comment card. We'd always look at it on a Monday morning after church, after Sunday, and this person wrote, "You ruined church for me. You moved the plants." We had plants up here on the stage, and apparently somebody moved them, probably to clean, you know, whatever. And we're like, "We ruined church for you?" You know. Anyway, we can get that way, can't we? We can. If you look hard enough, there's lots of stuff you could complain about. But our verses say don't do that. Why? Because as believers, that reflects on who we are and who we worship. It says instead, you need to be blameless and innocent. Children of God without blemish in the midst of what kind of world do we live in? A crooked and twisted generation. Do people complain where you work, at your job, where you go to school? You go to work tomorrow, let's say, how was your weekend? How's it going? Oh, I can't believe it. Well, you know, for a Christian to not complain and say something positive, that's a way, it says here, that you shine as lights in a dark world, right? That's good. You hold fast the word of life. That could mean you hold out the word of God. Here's what God's word says. Or you hold tightly to it as you live your life. I think it's kind of both. Only as we hold fast to the gospel can we effectively hold it out to other people. So balancing your attitude and your actions. All right, let's look at a third balance, a kind of a model of stability here, of seriousness and joy. Look how serious things start out with. He talks about being poured out as a drink offering. Now, what is that? Well, poured out, that's passive tense. That refers to something happening to you. His life is not under his control. He's in prison, and he's not sure what's going to happen. And so he uses an Old Testament phrase that the people were familiar with, a drink offering. That's not an offering for sins. The drink offering is sort of after that. That's sort of an offering of dedication and thanksgiving to God. So in the Old Testament, well, even I guess in New Testament times, the Jews would, on their altar, would kill and sacrifice an animal. That would be the sin offering. Then you would add a cup of wine, usually, or oil, and you'd pour it on the offering, which is still hot. And so it would be gone in a flash. Paul's using that to say, my life might be over pretty soon here. I don't know. It's not under in my control. But you know what? I'm going to pour it out. But he's a happy offering. What? He's a glad offering. Why? We could see it. I'm glad and rejoice with you. Kind of like this. Paul's saying, he's writing back to the Philippians. I know you're worried about my situation. I'm in prison and I could be executed at any moment. But my life isn't the important thing. It's your faith that really counts. So it says, I'm going to pour my life on the sacrificial offering of your faith. In fact, I'm glad. You could be glad too, right? Verse 18, likewise you should be glad. Rejoice with me. It's all because of Christ. Christ is worth it. It's worth living for Christ. It's even worth dying for Christ. So in the midst of challenging circumstances, Paul models for us some stability. His circumstances change. His feelings, I'm sure, go up and down and change. Maybe his thoughts, boy, I'm here in prison, you know, with a lot of time on my hands. I'm thinking about all sorts of things. But in the midst of it, he's stable. He's consistent. He balances all these things. That's Paul. All right, let's go to a second role model, Timothy. What's he going to model? He's going to model service. Now, who is Timothy? Among many of Paul's associates, and if you read the New Testament, there's all sorts of names. So-and-so greets you. So-and-so is with me. Send so-and-so. I'm sending so-and-so. You've got a lot of people that serve with him. Of all those people, Timothy is mentioned the most. He just keeps showing up. Paul met Timothy on his first missionary journey and asked him to join him on his second missionary journey. Timothy was going to serve. Now, Timothy is an interesting guy. The picture that the New Testament paints of him is not, he's not like Paul. What do we know about Timothy? He's young. He's shy. He was probably an introvert. He's a little insecure. Paul has to tell churches, greet him, honor him, don't cause him any hassle. And he's got stomach problems. They think either ulcers or some kind of thing. He's physically weak. But Paul says, you know what? Timothy. I'm going to hold up Timothy. Now, who did Timothy serve? Let's look. Let's get into the verses. He says, I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon so that I too may be cheered by news of you. Remember, this is the first century. There's no, I'll text you how I'm doing. Did you read my email? Right? The communication is slow. It's back and forth, and any chance you had with, well, if you're going there, oh, good, could you? And sometimes even, I'll give you this letter, Paul says, and you can deliver it. Or get you send news of me and get back to me and come back and tell me how things are going. And why Timothy? For I have no one like him who will be genuinely concerned for your welfare. Timothy served the church. Paul says, I'm going to send him. And he is like-minded. I can't come myself. I'm in prison. So I will send my understudy. I'll put in the backup quarterback, Timothy. He's a good one. Literally, equal soul was the adjective there. He has the same mind, the same spirit. He's concerned about you. Right? There's Timothy cares. There's hurting hearts out there, and nobody seems to care. There's people to be won for the Lord, and nobody's sharing their faith. There's kids and young people that need to know about Jesus and need to be trained, and why nobody cares. Well, Timothy does. He's going to serve. I love coming here on a Sunday morning and seeing you folks in action. You serve the church, and not just on a Sunday morning in this building. It's every day and throughout, you know, outside the building and outside of even Northfield. We're kind of spread out. We do all sorts of things. But especially on a Sunday morning, people are buzzing around doing all sorts of things. I trust that you have a place like that where you can serve the church. Let's keep going. Timothy also served Jesus. See, some of these people, they all seek their own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. But you know Timothy's proven worth. How, as a son with a father, he has served with me in the gospel. It's interesting how he puts it. He doesn't say he served me. Well, that's true. Timothy did serve Paul. But he served with me in the gospel. That's the main concern. That's the final authority, isn't it? Jesus and the gospel. I think that's a good perspective to have. So that when you go to work, yes, you have a boss, somebody you kind of have to answer to and give direction or whatever. But ultimately, like the next book after Philippians, Colossians says, you really serve a different master, don't you? You serve the Lord. I think that's a helpful perspective. When you and I go to work, no matter what we're doing, and granted, every job has things that we like and are fun or we're pretty good at, and then there's other parts that we're not so good at, we don't like, or why do I have to do this, you know? Yeah, it doesn't matter. If we serve Jesus, say, okay, Lord, I'm here to serve you. Boy, that kind of perspective. And then that obviously will translate into actions. That's going to be another way where people are going to see you shining like stars in a dark world. Wow. He's a different kind of worker. He's a Christian. That really makes a difference. Or if you help your neighbor, right? Do whatever. I don't know. There's this time of year, there's yard work or put away stuff from the summer or help somebody do something. Yes, you're serving them. I get that. That's good. But Jesus says, even if you give just a cup of cold water in my name, you're serving me. Here at church, you serve Jesus. Yes, you serve people. Yes, you have to work with people. Timothy says, Paul says he has proven worth, proven character, how a son with a father, he served together. He served with a team. Are you a good team member? Oh, good, they're on the team. Oh, yeah, he's on my team. Right, you can, it makes a difference. But if you're serving Jesus, then you don't have to be the one in charge. You can be on a team, or you can do your part. Or if somebody doesn't notice and give you lots of affirmation, which is nice, I get it. But you don't quit and grumble. You just keep serving. Well, Jesus, you know what I'm doing. I'm going to serve you. Timothy models service. Let's look at the last part about Timothy. He served the leaders too. You know Timothy's proven work. We saw this. How is a son with a father? He served with me. I hope therefore to send him just as soon as I see how it will go with me. Remember, Paul doesn't. He's not sure what's going to happen with his court case, with his imprisonment. There was a ministry there. He's not sure how all that's going to happen. But he's got proven character. I hope to send him as soon as I see how it goes with me. I trust in the Lord shortly. I myself will come also. Paul's hoping, well, I hope I can get out of prison here and go back to Philippi. Timothy served Paul while he's there in Rome, in prison. And now he's going to serve not only Paul, but he's going to serve the Philippian church too. We've already said that. But he's going to serve Paul in that way too. Oh, I hope to send him. He's gonna serve. Maybe you think, you know, I'm too young to do that. I'm too afraid to serve, to help, to share my faith, to lead a Sunday school class, or I mean, what if I embarrass myself? What if I say something wrong? Well, take a lesson from Timothy. Even though he was kind of that way temperamentally, he trusted God and he served. And it didn't matter where. He was willing and available to do that. All right, one more role model. Epaphroditus. There's a name for you kid parents looking for a name for your son. Epaphroditus. He's going to model suffering. Ooh. Paul can't come himself. Timothy is, he can't come right away, but apparently Epaphroditus is able to do that. Now, it is an interesting name. He's named after a Greek goddess, Epaphrodite. But that's not his character. His character is that of Christ, who was willing to take the form of a servant and suffer, and even who died. Jesus did. I'm glad these verses are in here, because I don't know about you, but we Americans, we don't do suffering very well, do we? Our brothers and sisters in other parts of the world, they have a good theology and a good practice about suffering and sacrifice and perseverance and hanging in there when times are tough. So we need a good model of what does it look like to suffer. Now, why do we have suffering? Let's look. I thought it necessary to send you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker, fellow soldier, and your messenger and minister to my need. For he's been longing for all of you and has been distressed because you heard that he was ill. Indeed, he was ill, near to death. And we'll see in the other verses, he'll say that again. He almost lost his life. Well, who is this guy? Epaphroditus was a member of the church in Philippi. And that church, the Philippian church, they were strong supporters of Paul. So when they heard that he was in prison, they were concerned. So they send Epaphroditus, hey, go help him. Go check it out. See what's happening. Well, he wasn't able to be there very long because he got sick. Now, travel in those days, you don't just hop on public transportation or hop in your gas-efficient car and buzz up to Rome. It was difficult and dangerous. And we don't know exactly what he had. But both malaria and bubonic plague were problems back then and untreatable in the Roman world. So if he got either one of those, he probably did get very sick. Either on his way to meet Paul or while he was there. I'm not sure. But he did it for the sake of the gospel. We'll see. How does Paul describe this guy? He's my brother. He's my fellow worker and fellow soldier. Now, there's a strong term, soldier, right? Fighting side by side, co-workers in the gospel who faced conflict. And so we're not sure what happened. Epaphroditus may have even been challenged or threatened or even thrown in prison himself. He suffers physically. Let's finish our verses here. Here's our last slide. He also suffered emotionally. It wasn't just that his physical body took some hits, but let's read. God had mercy on him, not only on him, but me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. Paul's suffering. I'm the more eager to send him, therefore, that you may rejoice at seeing him again, and that I may be less anxious. So receive him in the Lord with all joy and honor such men. He nearly died for the work of Christ, risking his life to complete what was lacking in your service to me. He's not dissing the Philippians. He's just saying, you couldn't be with me. You sent Epaphroditus. That was good. But he's sick. And he almost died. He says, where does it say here? He's worried. Epaphroditus wasn't just worried about himself, but he's worried about the Philippians. I want to go back. And boy, they're probably worried. I don't know about you, but I hate to admit this, but when I'm sick, I'm not a very good patient. I kind of whine, and I can you get me a cup of water? My wife's not here today because we had the grandkids all weekend here or whatever, but I make her wait on me, hand and foot. I'm not thinking about other people. I'm just thinking about me. Well, apparently Epaphroditus was worried about the Philippians. He wasn't concerned that much about himself. He says, oh, they're worried. They want to know how I'm doing. And he suffers emotionally just being there with Paul, too. You know, when people in those days, when people visited people in prison, sometimes they were looked upon as a little suspect themselves. You know, kind of guilt by association. What? And so there was a risk there. Sometimes when Christians get sick, other Christians have a problem with that because their theology is if you're sick, it's either because of sin or God is judging you or something is wrong. You remember in the Old Testament, the story of Job, who was more than sick. He was doing terribly. And his three friends show up. And at first they're nice. They're just there and they don't say anything. They're grieving. They're mourning with him. But eventually they're like, okay, Job, come on. Fess up, buddy. We know you're up to something. There's some hidden sin. Something wrong. This your problem. Job says, well, no. I mean, I'm not sinless, no. But my conscience is clear. Come on, you're hiding something. That was their advice. Well, if you fast forward to the end of the book of Job, God finally shows up and he rebukes the friends. He says, you spoke wrongly about me. How does Paul talk about Epaphroditus? He risked his life. He nearly died for the work of Christ. And Verse 29, you should receive him with joy and honor him. Maybe, I don't know, maybe the Philippian church felt a little weird. You know, maybe they're talking and they go, ugh, what an embarrassment. Epaphroditus, he's one of ours. We sent him there. You know, we should never have sent him. We should have sent somebody else. He gets sick and now he can't do it. Oh, man. That wasn't Paul's attitude at all, was it? He says, receive him with joy. He suffered physically, emotionally. There's a lot going on here. You should honor him. You should. He's a hero. You should have a hero's welcome when he gets back to Philippi. Well, suffering, physically, emotionally. He's a positive role model here, held up in honor. Well, those are our three role models, right? As I was thinking about this, the question is not so much whether we will learn from other people. The question is, what will we learn from other people and whom? We're going to have role models. We're going to see people. We're going to follow somebody. Three different guys. Paul the Apostle. Timothy, the young minister. And Epaphroditus, a lay person. Different personalities, different roles, different strengths and weaknesses. But we can all learn from them. Paul, we can learn stability. Timothy, service. And Epaphroditus, suffering. Let me close with this, and then I'm going to call the worship team up. Just a couple last takeaways. One, I think you should find a role model. Find somebody you can learn from. Maybe that's somebody here at church or somebody in your family or close by. Maybe it's somebody from the Bible. Wow, there's all sorts of... I could do a biographical study on David, Peter, Ruth, Esther, Mary and Martha, John. I mean, the list goes on and on. There's people to learn from. Or maybe I could look back into church history and learn, well, how did Christians in the past do it? So you get a book by Billy Graham. Go, how do you stay faithful and preach the gospel to more people than anyone who's ever lived? How do you do that, Billy Graham? He's gone home to be with the Lord now, but we can learn from him. So find a role model. And secondly, be a role model. If you're a parent,